Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joel.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, got you.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. We're actually going to push mailbag to tomorrow's episode, so you still got 24 hours to drop us a question or a voicemail and get that in, 331-979-1369. Happy Thursday to you, Matt. I was asking right before we started to record, catching that police chase last night in downtown Chicago, if anybody was watching WGN News at 9 and right into the 10 o'clock hour, wild scene. And I don't know if anybody listening out there was out driving at that time downtown Chicago, but I mean, it went on for 45 or 50 minutes. And Matt, you said you only caught the highlights of it on social media. What was your reaction to that, though?
I mean, I don't really ever know how to react when I'm watching the high speed chases. That honestly, my biggest takeaway was how impressive the work was from the chopper and the production team. Like, it was like, because you know, some of them you get little bits and pieces missing, and like you lose the feed for a second, or you lose the angle on the action of the chase, and like it was. From what I could tell when I caught the recap this morning on Twitter, like they pretty much caught the whole thing start to finish. It's pretty impressive.
It wasn't honestly, at times the WGN chopper had eyes on where the guy was, because he had gotten out of his car a couple different times and like drove onto the train tracks at one point. The police had lost him, but the WGN camera still had him on footage. So yeah, it was impressive. And like in those situations too, it's so difficult. I know some people like to poke fun at newscasters when they're trying to feed all this information to people at once as they're getting it live. So that can be a very difficult job. But yeah, it was wild. We were closing out the Joe O show yesterday and he's like, "Are you watching this on WGN right now?" He's like, this is wild. So it was the first day too that things kind of opened back up here in the city. Lakeshore Drive was wide open, and most of the streets downtown Chicago were open for the most part yesterday. So things were, I don't know, I hate to say back to normal, like back to what they were pre-COVID or post-COVID, pre-protests, but still weird. I mean, still not a lot of people out there.
I'm still worried, and I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop, man. Like so yesterday was the first day for Chicago to have restaurants open for outdoor, you know, like patio seating. And I saw on my block alone 4 or 5 different restaurants that had customers seated outside, waiting outside to be seated. I understand that Chicagoans are desperate to get outside after all of this, you know, quarantining at home, stay home, save lives. I understand people are frustrated. People want to get out and enjoy the nice weather as summer is starting to blossom here. But to me, I'm sitting here saying, oh my God, I'm braced for the second wave. I know that the main focus that has taken hold of Chicago and across the country right now are protests about police brutality and social injustice and racial injustice, and rightly so. But man, seeing these large gatherings, not only for the protests, but then also yesterday, a bunch of people out and about on patios of restaurants, I was like, oh, I you know, to each your own, man. And if they're, you know, if they tell us you're allowed to go out and sit at a patio at a restaurant, and you want to do that, hey, that is your right. Personally, I'm going to wait a while.
I hear you, man. I'm going to wait a while too. And honestly, like I can see it, like not even just in the city, it's in the suburbs too. Bars and restaurants wide open with patios open, places packed. So, and I think like the whole, I think still, so the social distancing and the wearing the masks and all of that should still be part of our everyday lives for the near future right now. But I mean, I'm worried about the second wave as well, especially with the amount of people that have gathered across our country just this weekend alone. I think puts a lot of things in perspective, and a lot of people, you know, as much as the protests have taken over everything that's happened over the last 72 hours or so, we definitely still have coronavirus to worry about too. So, you know, as the weather gets warmer, and we just saw it too, Matt, like the last couple of days, as the weather gets warmer and it's, you know, blue skies with no clouds and a beautiful Chicago summer day, it's going to be tougher and tougher not to be outside. So all I can ask for people to do is still maintain your social distance. And if you can, cover your face while you're out in public, and do the best to stay clean and to wash your hands as much as possible. I think that's all we can ask, the very, very bare minimum at this point. So,
all right, Jordan, before we get to a couple topics for today, including the situation of Lauri Markkanen's contract, wanted to tell our listeners about our friends at Blinkist, the most ultimate and ultimately useful life hack that I have come across in recent months. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on your personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read, but you never had time to. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you're working out. I like Blinkist because it gives me a break from all the sports news and sports media that I ingest on a daily basis, pretty much all day, every day on Twitter, reading columns, listening to podcasts about the sports world. And especially given today's climate, everything that's going on in this country, it's nice to read something and learn about something outside of sports for those of us who are consumed by sports all day, every day. And we're dealing with times when the sports world and the world around us in a much more real way are kind of crossing over. So, you know, maybe you want to get yourself a book about African-American history. Maybe you want to get a book about the civil rights movement. And you can ingest that information really quickly with Blinkist. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
So Matt, we cracked the door on contract extension talks with Lauri Markkanen, and I feel like the door is kind of busted wide open, and this is going to be a conversation we're going to have probably for the next year, and you know, maybe even less if the Bulls decide to come to some type of agreement with Markkanen. But let me just start the conversation with this. Is Markkanen worth more than Bobby Portis?
I would say yes.
So the conversation's got to start at $15 million a year. I think that's the bare minimum it starts at. That's what Portis got paid this year. Well, it was only, what, a 1-year deal with the Knicks? The Bulls offered
a 2-year deal, I believe, with a 2nd-year option.
So 2-year deal, but even go back to the Bulls offer to Portis before last season. That was, what, 4 years, somewhere around $50 million, $55 million. If we're having a contract extension talk about somebody that's going to be a vital piece to your future, it starts at bare minimum more than Portis, and that puts us in a conversation at 4 years, $60 million. Do you feel like, when I say those numbers to you, for Lauri Markkanen signing a 4-year, $60 million extension, you think that's too much? too little or right around where you think the contract is going to be? And I guess we can dive into some of the factors as well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a tough question because if you're asking me, is the Lauri Markkanen that we saw this season a player that's worth a four-year, $60 million deal? I would probably lean towards my answer being no. I mean, he was that bad. And it sucks to say that as somebody who has been a believer in Markkanen since day one as potentially the best piece of that rebuild trade when they gave up on Jimmy Butler. But you can't look at his production this season and say that's a player who's worth $15 million a year. Even in today's crazy inflated contracts that even mediocre NBA players are getting. Especially thinking about the fact that for next season and perhaps several seasons after the fact, the cap is going to go down or stay put because of the loss of revenue the league is suffering because of the pandemic. So $15 million in, say, like the 2016 summer when everybody exploded and like Mozgov and people like that were getting ridiculous money is not the same $15 million that it's going to be next season and the season after and the season after. And based on his production, I would say he's probably not worth that. However, my ultimate thought is I want the Bulls and Markkanen to wait. I'm sure Markkanen would like to get a deal done, but he doesn't want to sign for cheap. And the Bulls also don't want to feel like they are overpaying him based on what we saw him do this season. Not only with his production, but his lack of availability, a third season and a third injury or grouping of injuries that kept him out and off the court for a significant period of time. Use the last year of his rookie deal with the new front office in place to evaluate him, see if they can help him, see if they can fix his game, improve his game, give him the right tools he needs to really blossom into that potential all-star player we thought he was on his way to becoming, and then find a fair deal where Markkanen is paid his value. But that's why, like, talking numbers right now to me is like not a wasted experiment, but it's just like, what version of Markkanen are we putting a value on? Because if we're putting a value on the Markkanen we saw this season, $15 million is an overpay, in my opinion.
It's a good point about the money situation. Just kind of like figuring out a ballpark, and obviously the factors you were bringing up too, I guess off the top of my head, I didn't think about necessarily, like the cap going down and salaries definitely shrinking. I was just looking at what Markkanen is going to get paid for this upcoming season. So the 2020-2021 season, $6.7 million. And then he's got it looks like a qualifying offer of $9 million in 2021-22. And the interesting thing is, we've seen this play out many times, many, many times, Matt, even with the Bulls in recent history. Do you gamble on yourself? Say the Bulls come to Markkanen in October, right before, right at the end of the season. This is the quote-unquote very short offseason for the NBA, and the Bulls say, hey, look, we want you to be a part of our organization. We feel like you're going to be a piece for the future. We feel like Karnisovas wants to work on a relationship with you. You love it here in Chicago. We love you. We want you to be a foundational piece. What about saying we bump your pay up, you're secure at 4 years, $60 million for the next 4 years? You'll go from making $6 million to three times that much at $15 million. You'll be locked up and secured. And the biggest thing of it all is he won't have to worry about injury risk. That's the thing that scares me the most. With anybody that the Bulls talk about, and I don't even care if they're bringing in their own training staff now, the players that are still here were already evaluated and drafted and developed with guys in the past. We still have to think about that. So to me, it's like, it's playing the Portis game again. Portis bet on himself and lost. Well, I guess in the long term he lost, because he could be making 4 years over $60 million or something like that, as opposed to 2 years, 30. But still, I mean, Portis bet on himself and got hurt and didn't have the year that he thought he was going to, ended up getting traded, and it was lucky enough to get a contract with the Knicks that still was right in the ballpark he wanted. That's not going to happen now, and especially with Markkanen. Markkanen doesn't have a big enough sample size that can prove to anybody he's worth $15, $20 million and can be a number two or number three guy on a cornerstone team yet. I think the biggest point that you made was the unknown right now. But knowing the Bulls' history and knowing Reinsdorf's history, I would say it's safe to assume there is going to be some type of contract in front of Markkanen before opening day 2020-2021. I really do. I believe it. I think that the Bulls are going to put it in front of him like they've done to Jimmy Butler, like they've done to Scottie Pippen, like they've done to Bobby Portis, like they've done to a handful of other players. Sign him on a little bit cheaper, lock him up long term, and see if they explode into a star. It's just a matter of what Markkanen's going to want to do.
But I think there are risks on both sides of that. If the Bulls front office decided to go that route of putting a contract extension in front of Lowry before they start next season, because there are risks of two things happening. There are risks of the Bulls not wanting to offend Markkanen with a lowball offer, even though the Bulls historically have certainly given plenty of players lowball offers, which they don't think are lowball offers. They think are fair, but the player might see it as a lowball offer. And then Lowry's like, are you kidding me? And then Lowry has this negative feeling and this negative thought in his head as he's playing out the final year of his rookie deal, saying like, ah, to hell with you, front office, to hell with you, ownership. You're trying to lowball me. And then the other side of the potential risk is the Bulls wanting to lock down Markkanen, a piece that they theoretically still see as a piece of the rebuild, a piece of the future. And again, we have yet to know exactly concretely how AK and Eversley feel about Markkanen, other than Eversley saying, yeah, I would really love to know more about why Markkanen became a ghost of his former self this season. But if they are worried about losing Markkanen and sign him to a deal that they know Markkanen will think is fair to sign him up long term, what if Markkanen doesn't pan out? What if the version of Markkanen we saw this season, even if you get rid of Jim Boylan and put a new system in place, is a injury prone guy who is not actually a player who's capable of reaching the ceiling we all thought he had? Because you don't want to get stuck with a player on an immovable contract because the player isn't worth that contract. The Bulls have been in that boat before too, with a number of players, even in the last, 5 to 7 years, they've been in that boat a number of times. I mean, all of it to me points to don't try to rush either side, Markkanen and his representatives or the Bulls, to get a deal done before the beginning of his final rookie year season. I mean, I would be very uncomfortable either way, regardless of what the numbers were. I want to see a healthy Markkanen in a different system who's hopefully improving. And if it's a bet on himself and Jim and he wins like Jimmy Butler kind of situation, I'll be fine with that. But either way, it gives me great pause and great concern if you're talking about hurriedly signing Markkanen to a new contract before next season starts.
I think you bring up some really good points. And the one thing that, too, in Markkanen's mind probably is like, especially if he has a good season coming in, he plays on this final year before the qualifying offer, whether he's got to decide on that or not. If he has a good year, I mean, I wouldn't blame him for looking at Otto Porter Jr. and saying, damn, guys, you guys paid him $52 million to play what? Half a season, if that, combined? I got to make somewhere more than $15 million, especially if he has a good year. So there is some basis, I think, for Markkanen to kind of push back on the Bulls and say, you guys were willing to pay guys outrageous amounts of money. I think I'm worth more than that. And I think Zach LaVine could say the same thing. And speaking of LaVine real quick, it does feel a little bit like we're in that situation again where we kind of went back and forth about LaVine. And maybe you and I both felt a little bit more confident in what we saw in LaVine, although there was an ACL injury there. To signing him to a long-term deal, that 4 years, $80 million. There's a lot of questions too. I think we were 50-50 split during that summer, Matt, when we put out a poll that got like 5,000 votes. It was like a dead even 50-50 split of pay him or don't pay him. It's ended up working out for the Bulls in their favor. The question is what's the better risk to take? Gamble that Markkanen plays well and he ends up asking for more money and you're willing to pay him that, or sign him long term and hopefully becomes that star and you bank out? Historically, the Bulls go with the latter as to the former.
They do. And then you get those gems sound bites from Gar Forman when he was asked about the Jimmy Butler max contract that Jimmy signed, and they were all sitting there for the press conference for it, and saying like, well, I feel like we all won, when he was asked about Jimmy Butler betting on himself and winning. Like, I mean, that was just one of my favorite Gar Foreman moments.
To retool, not rebuild.
But I mean, if they put a pause on this extension and let Markkanen play out his rookie year deal, and Markkanen really blossoms, and we get the Markkanen that those of us who have believed in him have always wanted to see on the floor next season, and that ends up with the Bulls paying him a higher priced contract than if they tried to get something done this offseason, I would be okay with that. The other potential concern there is what we saw with Zach LaVine, who you were just mentioning. You know, do the Bulls want to put the money down, or do they want to let him walk? With Markkanen, you potentially have a risk of losing him as a restricted free agent. Obviously, as a restricted free agent, the Bulls could match any offer that Markkanen might sign on the open market, much like the Bulls told Zach LaVine, go get yourself an offer if you want one from some other team, and we'll almost assuredly match it. So he signed an offer sheet with the Kings, and the Bulls quickly matched it. And Zach LaVine said he understood the business element of why the Bulls did that. And right now, that looks like a very team-friendly deal that the Bulls were able to match. Something similar could happen with Markkanen, or something similar could happen with Markkanen with a different result, where maybe he plays so well that he signs an offer sheet with some other team that the Bulls say, hey, Markkanen had a good season, but we don't think he's worth this. And then the question becomes, just like it was with Zach, are we willing to let him go so that we don't have to pay him that price? And that will, just like everything else over the next coming months of like the longest offseason in history, I feel like Game of Thrones, winter is coming for the Bulls and their inactivity. It will come down to AK and Eversley and their new staff evaluating Markkanen. But I think they want to actually evaluate Markkanen on the floor with their own eyeballs, talking to Markkanen, working with Markkanen before they make such a decision.
Kept our flexibility long term, which was also important to us.
Oh, man, that makes me depressed. Something else that was depressing is I went back and looked at Markkanen's numbers from this past season. And, well, those are duty, man. It was not great. It was not great to go back and be reminded about that. But one thing that is not depressing, Matt, is our friends at Rock Auto. RockAuto.com, a wonderful sponsor here for Locked On Bulls and the Locked On Podcast Network. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions like, is this an Odyssey LX or is it an EX? And wait while the counter orderman tries to find the parts on his computer, choosing only the brands the warehouse happens to carry. You have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for more important things like your mortgage or your food. And we know how important that is right now. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, or 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? Matt, this is a great point. I know a lot of what I did with my car to kind of save some money, especially when I was in college and right now, brake pads, those seemingly are some of the most expensive things to get replaced. And not only a dealership, but outside other places, being able to buy the brake pads yourself. And if you know somebody who can install them, or maybe you're handy enough to install them yourself, you can save a fortune. And that's where Rock Auto comes in handy. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's price are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest price possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even a new car carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same exact parts? And that is so true. Cannot say it enough. I actually need some new brake pads, so I'm going to check out Rock Auto and buy some new brake pads coming up in the next couple of weeks and see if I can be one of those do-it-yourselfers. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there. How did you hear about us box that they know we sent you? You can write Locked On Bulls, Locked On, or the Locked On Podcast Network. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Matt, we touched on this briefly yesterday, and I was thinking about it more and more yesterday about Jim Boylan and just the NBA's plan to return, as we're kind of hearing the official plan today, the timelines of everything. Heard from Kurt Heelan too, who's a lead NBA guy. He's been around a really long time, works for NBC Sports. And he said that the NBA is going to try not only to cram in this 22-game series of playoffs, play-ins, and the finals, plus the offseason. They want to turn around and have an 82-game season, plus the offseason, plus the draft, and all of that for next year. Cram that all in and be done by the end of August 2021. That's a hell of a lot of basketball, and that's a lot of cramming to do with two offseasons and two playoffs in a full season in a matter of what? What is that? Not even 18 months? So it made me start thinking about coaching. We talked about what happens if the Bulls want to pursue somebody that's in a deep playoff run in September. Are the Bulls just going to be coachless if they decide to say goodbye to Jim Boylan in July or August or even sooner than that? So what do you think about, and how do you think this plays in terms of the Bulls deciding whether or not they give Jim Boylan an opportunity or they look for somebody else that's not associated with the team?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a potential issue. And that would be a long time for the Bulls to just not have a head coach if they decide to move on from Boylan fairly quickly. Now that, you know, I think as of later today, it will become official that that vote with 3/4 in favor will pass with the Board of Governors, and the 22-team resumption of the season in Florida will be official, and that will leave out the Bulls. If that is what AK and Eversley are waiting for to make the dismissal of Jim Boylan official, then we would likely get that word fairly soon so that they can continue, or so that they can really begin that coaching search. But as you said, there are potential obstacles with that as far as those who are continuing the season down in Florida and some of those candidates on other staffs right now. That's clearly way too long of a time to just not have a head coach for your team. I mean, especially in such a strange time. Like, these are unprecedented times for the NBA and professional sports leagues across the country. And you want to make sure that you have all of your ducks in a row so that you can navigate this as successfully as possible. So I'm not in love with the idea of the Bulls like firing Jim Boylan, and then there's just like this gap in time where they have a roster that the front office can evaluate and that maybe they could do a little bit of work with, but there's just no head coach of the team. And then, like, how do you get yourself a full, like, you know, one of the advantages that teams that don't make this cut could have and use is that extra time. And those teams that have a head coach and a system in place can really, with voluntary workouts, assuming that certain, you know, other rules and restrictions about COVID-19 are lifted in their gyms, can work together to install new systems, you know, get really thorough quality practices in and feel ready for next season and kind of get a jump on training camp. That is a potential advantage that the Bulls and the other eight teams being, or the other seven teams being left at home could have, but the Bulls won't have that advantage if they don't have a head coach?
I'm just going to throw it out there because these are the two of the names that have been connected the most with the Bulls, Kenny Atkinson and Adrian Griffin. The Toronto Raptors are the second best team in the Eastern Conference. If we're talking about a game seven of the NBA Finals being on October 12th, let's just say for the fact that it's middle September when the conference finals start. If they take that to a game seven and Adrian Griffin is the guy that you really want, or you at least want to be able to interview or continue interviews with, I mean, you're talking about October. But for the first time, your new head coach is going to be able to come in, actually focus on this Bulls team and not worry about a playoff run or, you know, taking time away from that, as opposed to where you could fire Jim Boylan as soon as the next couple of weeks, hire Kenny Atkinson but before the start of July, know where your draft pick's going to be, and not even just Kenny Atkinson, anybody else that's out there that may not be on a playoff contending team or is just a free agent as far as a coach goes. But I wonder how much that's going to weigh in the Bulls' decision if they are clearly and definitively ready to just get rid of Boylan, or if they like somebody that's on one of those playoff teams so much so that they say, you know what, maybe we will start the season with Boylan. It'll give us a chance to reset at least a little bit, a chance to evaluate at least what we have in terms of all of our players for a short period of time, then do our coaching search maybe towards the end of next season. But man, like, I can't even imagine the Bulls going into next year and trying to pitch that to their fans that, yeah, you know what, we made a lot of these really great moves in the offseason, but the one biggest sticking point is your head coach, and he's going to stick around at least for this season. I just can't see that happening. But what do you think about, like, in terms of importance of weighing those factors of hiring somebody now as opposed to maybe just playing the waiting game?
Yeah, so here's what I would say is maybe the most logical path forward. Based on what we've heard, and there are reports that AK and Eversley have interviewed the Bulls roster, you know, top to bottom in these Zoom meetings that they did when they got hired, came on board to say, all right, what are your impressions of how this season went? What are your impressions of X, Y, and Z? And yes, absolutely, what are your impressions of Coach Boylan? And that those responses from the players were, to put it kindly, enough of a mixed bag that they are leaning towards moving on from Jim and hiring a different coach. So, for the sanity and feeling of assuredness for these players, regardless of them being, you know, in the eyes of the new front office right now, we're definitely keeping this guy, we might keep this guy, or we might actually look to move this guy, regardless of where they fall in that spectrum, that as a players first organization, which Eversley said they want to be, and AK has echoed those sentiments as well, we're going to dismiss Jim Boylan. And then what I would do if I were them is, if they are interested and if he is interested in staying on board, naming Chris Fleming as an interim head coach, which is weird for an offseason, but if they come to some sort of agreement with Chris Fleming where he feels comfortable playing that role for now and being, you know, maybe they ask him, you know, if we were to add you to the pool of candidates once we conduct a more thorough coaching search, you know, would you feel comfortable if we bring in someone else to stay on their staff, et cetera, however that conversation might go. In the meantime, would you feel comfortable taking the reins for some of our off-season workouts and things of that nature? I know it's not a perfect solution, but it's a reasonable solution so that you get the unwanted, you know, issue out of the door. You give everyone a clean slate and say, sorry about that whole Jim Boylan experiment. We know it didn't go well. We know he threw you under the bus every night after you lost, after he spent the fourth quarter sputtering around, not knowing what he was doing, and either calling timeouts unnecessarily or not having timeouts to call, et cetera, et cetera. You get that bad juju out of the room, and then you move forward. And if you need an interim head coach to do so, then you name an interim head coach, ideally someone who is willing to stick around as maybe a candidate to be earning the actual head coaching job or staying along as an associate head coach?
That was the door I was going to ask you if the Bulls would be willing to open back up, because Fleming's listed as lead assistant coach as opposed to what Boylan was under Fred Hoiberg, which was associate head coach. It seems like a very Bulls thing to do, and I don't know if that's necessarily a good or a bad thing. Like, some coaches don't like the idea of associate head coaches just because it might undermine what they're trying to do. And we've seen it firsthand here in Chicago just over the last couple of years. I heard Tom Thibodeau talking about how he never wanted to be an associate head coach because he didn't want to feel like he was undermining people. And if he was going to have full control, he wanted full control of the team. But that's something you could do with Chris Fleming, or maybe you bump him up and say he's the associate head coach. You fire Jim Boylan. And in the meantime, you say, hey, through back channels, whoever it may be, maybe Adrian Griffin is your guy, and say through back channels, he's going to be the head coach once they're out of the playoffs and we can actually hire him. For now, Chris Fleming's going to kind of lead the charge on this. Or, man, I don't know what the relationship was at the end with Kenny Atkinson and Chris Fleming, but maybe that's something that they pursue as well. They're like, you know what? No, we feel strongly about Atkinson and feel like he's the guy, and we want to start this thing right now, so we're going to go ahead and do that. But I don't even think it's out of the question to say that Chris Fleming could be a lead candidate for this job. I think he definitely could be. But again, so I guess to wrap this up, Jim Boylan, still in your mind, even with the shortened season and all of this talking about when guys can sign, when they can talk to teams, all of that, you still think there's absolutely zero way Jim Boylan is with this Bulls team to start a brand new season?
Correct. I think there is a 0% chance that Jim Boylan is this team's head coach when they begin the 2021 season. And as far as the timeline of when he's dismissed, I can't be as confident with that answer. But I do think it would be in the team's best interest to move on from him sooner rather than later, to let everybody know, the players, everyone in the organization, including the Reinsdorfs and their plea, oh, we'd love you to give Jim a shot. No, establish once again your position of power. AK dismissed Gar Forman immediately. Good. That was the right move. He, you know, because of the Reinsdorf's loyalty to Paxson, allowed Paxson to stay in this flowery title. Hey, here's your new, your new label on your office with your new flowery advisory title. Cool, good. Stick you in a jar. We don't need you. If we need you, we'll come open the jar and ask for your opinion. Good. That's the right move. Bring in your own people. Good. Those are the right moves. Dismissing Jim Boylan is unquestionably the right move, and it is one that they should do to once again establish what they were told by ownership, which is, we're bringing you in to run the show. Don't let us get in your way. Run the show. Jim's dismissal has got to be the next thing that happens. And yes, it will be a dicey situation. It will be a pretty rapids heavy river that they're going to go down in this weirdly long offseason to find that answer as their next head coach. But that is a separate problem from the solvable immediate problem of getting Jim Boylan away from this organization.
I'm not going to dispute you on that. You're right. I got a G League guy in there that, I don't stop coaching the team because we're down. I don't do that. I've never done that. I never will.
I work for Greg Popovich.
I'm going to miss him, man. I'm going to miss Jim Boylan. At least the sound drops. Again, I will say that. But yeah, I think I'm with you too. I was just surprised just to hear one particularly in-tap NBA guy say he's not 100% confident that Boylan's out, just because of all the weird things going on right now and the shortened season and all of that. But, the Bulls are trying every opportunity. Like, even you had mentioned yesterday that the Bulls are and the Hawks, I think, were two teams that were willing to be a part of a 30-team startup back down in Orlando. So they're trying to give Jim every opportunity to have like a mini tryout in front of this new front office. I just don't think he's going to get that opportunity. So we just play the waiting game at this point, but maybe we
and
can start.
What about anything in our past season and a half of evidence would suggest that Jim would pass that tryout if the Bulls were given that opportunity?
He's not up.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea, but
he's a baller. He balls.
I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks to our sponsors today in Blinkist and rockauto.com. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Do you guys think that there's a possibility Jim Boylan comes back next year, given the shortened schedule, given just everything, all the factors that are going to play out leading into the 2021 season? How about thoughts on marketing too? You guys think that a contract extension is likely? What do you think the negotiations are going to be like over the next, I don't know, 12 months, 12 to 18 months? And another question I want to throw out there too for our listeners. Of the guys on this team right now, most willing to move of the core of Kobe White, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., Otto Porter, Chris Dunn, any of those guys that you quote unquote feel like they're part of the core, who would you most likely want to see moved and what would you move them for? So hit us up 331-979-1369. Drop your text and voicemails there. You can hit us up at any time of the day or night, whenever you're listening to us. 331-979-1369. We're on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Pound sand.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
You were high on.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com